Visay.
Spend the day Visay.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Sai's glory, his divine story. Every Thursday on Morning Glory. Catch the vibe with me, Karuna Munshi, on Radio Sai's Thursday Live on Asia Stream at 9:40 a.m.
Om Shri Sai Ram. Loving salutations at the lotus feet of Bhagwan Shri Satya Sai Baba, the love of our lives, the wind beneath our wings, the beat of our hearts, the voice, the ears, the heart and soul of Radio Sai. Sai Ram, dear listeners, and welcome to Thursday Live. You are tuned to our Asia stream coming to you live from Prashanti Nilayam, India, the spiritual capital of the universe. My name is Karuna and I thank you for staying with us on this lovely Thursday morning, June the 12th, 2014. You are tuned to this live broadcast from Prashanti Nilayam, where the time right now is exactly 9:41 a.m. Indian Standard Time. Current weather conditions in Prashanti Nilayam looks like those hot and 40 Celsius days are finally over, and they're over for good, we hope. For this year at least, we are experiencing daytime highs of 35 degrees Celsius with lows in mid-20s. Thanks to the pre-monsoon showers we have had, there is a comfortable tinge of moisture in the air and the breeze is cool and relaxing and especially pleasant in mornings and evenings. Compared to the sweltering heat in North India, the weather in Prashanti Nilayam is relatively pleasant and welcoming. Today on Morning Glory, we have lined up for you the final part of our two-part Triswit Divinity conversation with Mr. Tom Leahy of Australia, as well as a must-not-be-missed jovial and lively episode of Fleeting Moments, Lasting Memories from our classics collection. This is an interview with Mr. Indreshwar Singh. But first, I can't let this moment pass without thanking everyone out there who sent us overwhelming feedback on the special episode of Morning Glory that we aired live from the studio on May the 15th to mark the second anniversary of Thursday Live. That day, you heard from almost all the RJs who joined us for a live conversation in the studio. But one of your favorite RJs and my colleague, Brother Chandu Vijay, could not join us then as he was traveling in the Himalayas at that time. So just to be thorough, as Bhagwan would expect of us, I'm very happy to welcome RJ Chandu Vijay to the studio today for a live conversation about his show, Love to Love, that airs on Thursday Live at 2 p.m. By way of introduction, I'd like to share with you that our brother Chandu Vijay attended the Sri Satya Sai Vidya Peet, Sri Sailam, Calicut, Kerala from grade 7 through 12. Chandu Vijay joined the Vrindavan campus of the Sri Satya Sai Institute of Higher Learning in 2001 for a bachelor's degree in biosciences. And 3 years later, in 2004, he joined the Prashanti Nilayam campus of the Sai University for his MSc Biosciences, graduating with a master's degree in 2006. Thereafter, he began his MPhil in Biosciences department and continued with PhD. When he was 3 years into his doctorate research, that is in October 2011, Chandu made a seismic shift in his career path and opted to join the Radio Sai team. In his free time, the recently married Chandu Vijay enjoys singing and reading. This Appleholic is a self-confessed fan of everything Apple and Steve Jobs and of fitness guru Tony Houghton. Chandu likes to stay updated about technology and the design industry. At Radio Sai, he currently works in the designing department, assisting Professor G. Venkatraman in his slides and books and designing Sai Blossom product covers. And of course, the cherry on top for his hard work is the hosting of Love to Love every Thursday at 2 p.m. on Radio Sai's Asia Stream. With that, it's time to welcome Brother Chandu Vijay on the show. Sai Ram, Brother Chandu.
Thank you, Didi. Thank you for having me today.
It's great to have you. How is it going?
It's going good. I was down with fever last week, so I'm not 100% yet. I'm in the 90% right now.
Okay, I'll keep my questions very easy, if that helps. Now, just let's begin with the story of your joining Radio Sai when you were already 3 years into your PhD.
Yeah, that's a story actually. The thing is, when Swami was here physically, I'm sure 99% of us, or almost everybody here, never asked, why am I joining a particular institute? The only reason was to stay back here and to enjoy Swami's physical proximity.
Yeah, just to buy time.
Yeah, to talk to him every day. Yeah. That was the only goal. Mm. But after Swami's physical departure, that's when I asked this question, what am I doing in the university? What kind of contributions am I making? You know, because it is now no more just staying back to have Swami's physical darshan. I can be anywhere and I could be connected to Swami as anybody else. So that's when these kind of questions started happening in me. And I was always interested in the kind of work that Radio Sai was doing. Even while I was in the college, I was all the every free time I got, I used to go record the band. I used to get involved with the singers, and then I used to just simply, not officially, unofficially, I had a laptop. Because I was a research scholar, I was allowed a laptop. So I had this small microphone, and then I used to go around recording them, experimenting with the sounds, and then reading about on the internet about recording. And then I installed Photoshop in my computer, and then, you know, all this kind of stuff I was doing when I was in the college. So I was very much interested in this. And academics was not really my heart's calling. It's not like I was a bad student. I was always an O-grader student throughout my academic career. But somehow I felt that my heart is in this and not exactly in academics. So I felt, because of that, the degree, doctorate degree, did not have any value for me. Even though, you know, it was like 3 years into PhD, and so many people asked me, why you couldn't have just completed it? It was just one or two more years. You could have completed it and then joined Radio Sai. But frankly, if Swami was there, then the icing on the cake is receiving that PhD degree from Swami. That is something. But, you know, simply calling myself Dr. Chandu, it didn't have any kind of charm for me. And so I felt, why not leave it right now, before it is too late, and join Radio Sai.
Well, I guess the university's loss became Radio Sai's gain. No, we are glad you answered your heart's calling and joined us. Now, once you came on board in October of 2011, then how did you get on to the RJing when Thursday Live came along?
So even this was not something that was planned. I remember when we had a meeting in Radio Sai, this Thursday Live discussion happened.
Right.
And I had no intentions of becoming an RJ because I am not a speaker. Even during my college days, throughout my stay in the college for close to 8 or 9 years, I have spoken in public, that is in front of the students or the faculty, only twice or thrice. That's it. So I was not somebody who would come out up and speak and all that. So because of that, I was like sitting behind thinking, okay, I'm not going to do all this stuff. I'll just be happy sitting in my room and designing things. But that's when Sai Prakash suddenly took my name and he said, Chandu, why don't you also join this team? So when he said that, I was like, oh, okay. I couldn't even stand up and say no because everybody was looking at me. Then I said, okay, I'll give it a try. And then we had a trial run, if you remember.
Yes, I do.
Yeah, so that was a 45-minute slot. So I don't remember if it was Bishu or you or somebody else suggested that since you are interested in music, why don't you do a music-based show? Mm-hmm. So that became like a little saving grace for me because I thought, okay, if it is music-based, then I don't have to speak so much. So I think I can manage this show.
You can play the tracks and just talk in between.
Talk in between a little bit. Uh-huh. So that's how it happened, basically.
So how did you determine exactly what sort of a shape your slot was going to take? I know the music was suggested to you, but then you opted for a very multicultural and Western style. So tell us about that, the genesis of Love to Love.
Yes, so I was always interested in Western music right from the beginning, my school days. You know, in fact, when Mr. Harry Goetz, who is to train us in the band, he's from Netherlands, he's an amazing percussion expert. So he once heard me play an instrument called recorder. It's a Western instrument.
Yes.
he heard and he told me that, I think you are a Westerner in your last life because I have not heard any Indian play this way. So I think I have some past life connection with
and you were
music.
Carrying it over from last life practice.
Yeah. So I thought that since there are so many English songs in our collection, I thought, why not I do a English song based show, because I don't think there are any radio programs based on English songs as of now for us. So that's how it started. So I started, I thought I'll play English songs and I'll speak about the song or about some value that the song conveys or some story, any story, something like that. That's how it's Love to Love got started. But then slowly I ran out of English songs because we have a very limited collection of English songs in our
repository,
database. So then I kind of expanded it to all kinds of songs, any music, whether it is bhajans, English songs, Telugu songs, Hindi songs, whatever. So I don't restrict myself now to any particular kind of language. And it started off as just speaking, I was not doing anything theme-based. I would just speak in random, okay, about anything, about some Swami story about Swami, or it could be something that I witnessed in Kulwant Hall, anything. But slowly I realized that when I started listening to my own shows, I realized that people would enjoy better if there is some kind of theme that is running throughout. So there is a proper take-home message for them rather than listening to some story.
Random, yeah.
Yeah, that's how I started doing on value-based things. So I started on human values like Satya, Dharma, Shanti, like that. Then it went on to compassion, service, that type. And in the middle, I was always also doing interviews with singers or other boys who are Swami students who are into music. So I did interviews with Sai Prakash, with Arvind Sai, with Sai Krishna, who was in the Telugu radio, then with Sri Hariharan sir, Mr. Hari Subramaniam. And I realized that these are the most popular
episodes. Yeah, a lot of feedback came to those.
Mainly
I remember.
For interviews, because people surely love those, listening to those stories and things like that. So now what I do is, whenever I get a chance to do an interview, I do. Recently I did with Mr. Sonam Gamso. He was here 2 weeks back, so I did an interview with him. I think last week, Love to Love. Oh, no, I think before that, 1 week before that.
Yeah, there was good feedback to that as well.
That, and then other times I do based on, if not on theme, on something that is of some, how do I say it, some question that is of importance, like
Issue-based,
yes. Mm. Yes, something like, for example, today I'm doing on anger management.
Oh, good one.
Yeah. And once I did on reacting versus responding. I think these kind of things are very thought-provoking topics. Mm. Yeah, that's what I do now.
So you pick these very relevant and useful themes. How do you source the music to go with it?
I really don't connect music to what I speak.
I see.
Yeah, because it's very difficult. We don't have, if I take anger, I'm sure we're not going to get any songs on anger in our database. Nobody's going to sing on anger. So I just play any song. Doesn't matter, you know. Mm. So songs are there. But one criteria that I keep in mind when I select a song is that, do I like the song? When I hear the song, am I in a good place? If I don't like the song, then I won't play it.
I'm sure
that if I don't like it, mostly even other people don't like it. So that is a criteria which I go by.
I see. Now, what's the hardest part of RJing Love to Love every week after week?
Yes, yes. I think the hardest part is RJing.
RJing?
The talking part for me, because since I'm not used to talking. So to tell the truth, I have a script. It is not like I come and put on the mic and I speak him
impromptu.
No, I have a script with me. I prepare for it. And thankfully, by Swami's grace, I have a sister from Malaysia who helps me. Her name is Darshana. I think she had helped Radio Sai with something else before, I think.
I see.
So she helps me with the content. So generally what we do is we have a call somewhere around Monday or Tuesday like that, or maybe Sunday, Monday, we have a call and then we discuss over the phone or on Skype. We discuss and say, okay, I think this could be the topic. And then I do, and then as I discuss, a lot of points come up when we discuss. So please note that.
Some brainstorming.
Down. Yes. And then what I do is I go to the internet and I search the internet, all sites, not just Radio Sai, anything and everything. Then I collect links and then I send these links to her telling, I think I find these links very interesting. Can I take a look? And then she puts it all together and gives me a nice story. And then I get the story and then I change it according to my this thing. Because if you look at somebody else's script, it is difficult to read. You know, because
so you have to make it your own in your own style of delivery.
Then I tune it, I change it. Sometimes I read and I get, oh, I think this story will fit here. Then I add that story there. Or sometimes I find this may not be good, I delete it. I change it and then I put the songs. That's how it happens.
You know, very few of our listeners will realize how much help we get from our volunteers all over the world. I also depend on someone named Divya Trivedi, who's I think also in Malaysia actually.
Okay.
And the amount of work Divya does for us is just incredible in transcribing. And we could never get this kind of 24/7, so many channels running, up and running, if we did not have so many volunteers to fall back on. And they do their part so sincerely.
Yes, yes. Very much. Very,
very grateful. Wherever you are, Darshana, big thank you from all of us for being a part of our team. Now, what's the best part of RJing Love to Love for you?
The best part is again RJing. It is the worst part and it is the best part.
That is the paradox of Chandu's life. Okay.
I really enjoy once I get into the groove. You know, initially, it is a very scary thing. Like when I come and sit.
Are you nervous?
Yeah, I'm very nervous. Like when Arvind and Prem, I'll be sitting outside the studio.
Because afternoon satsang is going on.
Yes. I'll be very nervous then. I come and sit in front of the mic and then their last song will be going on. And invariably, when I speak out my first part, there will be some goof up or the other when I say things because of the nervousness.
And but then you settle down.
Yes, once I'm settled down, then it is cool. Then it just goes on. So
I see. I guess that's the story of all of us. Now, going forward, what can we look forward to from Love to Love?
That's actually a very difficult thing to say because how Love to Love has evolved from where it was, that was not something that I planned. It just evolved very naturally.
So like everything else on Radio Science, organic evolution. Swami is pulling the strings.
Yes, so I can't say, but one thing is you can expect interviews, okay? Wherever I get a chance, whenever I see somebody, people like Sonam sir or Hariharan sir, whenever they come, whenever I see that there is an ex-student here who was a musician, I try to catch them for an interview. So interview is something I'm sure that I'll continue to do because even for me, it's a break because you don't have to prepare so much for an interview like how if you have to go and do a show alone for 1.5 hours because now in interview, it's a conversation, so it evolves naturally. So you don't have to, you know, you just prepare 6 to 7 questions and then you just let it evolve.
Yeah, go with the flow.
Go with the flow. So that is one. And I also would like to do more interactive programs, like how I had done before the song or a bhajan that you people who love to listen to.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, a lot of people liked it. And many people wrote back, saying that this is the bhajan that I would like to listen to a million times. And then I read out their email and I used to play the songs. I did that for a month or two and then I kind of ran out of people here. So I stopped that and again went back to theme-based. I think I would like to revive something like that, which is interactive, where it is not just me speaking. There are more number of people.
Voices and variety.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that adds a lot of variety to the program and makes it more interesting.
Yeah, sounds good. And I think once our listeners are involved, there's an interaction, there's a bind. We have always found, and any time we have called upon our listeners to participate, they're so overwhelmingly, generously involved, and they come forward and they share their thoughts. I think that really is a nice way to engage everybody. Fantastic. Vijay, Chandu, final thoughts. Words of wisdom from the young man.
I don't have any words of wisdom to share. I'm sure
who RJs love to love.
Most of our listeners are more wise than I am. And it's not like even when I am presenting my program, it's not like these are my thoughts and, you know, I am sharing my words of wisdom with everybody. It's not. It's just researched and, you know, the words of wisdom which is already out there. I'm just collecting it and I'm just channelizing it for everybody. As concluding remark, I think this is more for me than for anybody else. I think it is very important that we keep asking ourselves, especially us who are here in Puttaparthi, as to why am I here right now? Because since Swami is physically not present now, I could be anywhere and I can connect to Swami, but why am I here in Prashanthi Nilayam? What am I trying to take advantage of being in this place? I think that is a question we have to keep asking ourselves every day so that we don't go off track. Because otherwise, now staying in Puttaparthi could be like staying in any other place. You know, we could just have a TV at home, come for work, go back, watch TV in the evening, go to sleep, again eat, come for work. Life could become very mechanical like it is anywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is one question I keep asking myself. So that is why I personally make sure that I devote my time for prayer, for physical exercise, for when I work, you know, in the office. And then again, when I go back after work, how can I spend my time in a very constructive way?
Because using as many Apple products as possible.
Actually, that's a big distraction. Seriously.
I said because, so. You're an Appleholic.
No, and it is the biggest distraction.
We have to enroll you at AA, Appleholic Anonymous.
I think I should get enrolled and I should come out of it anyway.
Yeah, he needs to go for. Yeah. You know, okay, very good. Well, thank you, Brother Chandu, for joining me for this live conversation. I'm sure our listeners have enjoyed getting to know you and know who the person is behind that voice, who hosts Love to Love every Thursday. Appreciate your presence on Morning Glory.
Thank you very much, Didi.
Dear brothers and sisters, that was our wise beyond his young age, Mr. Chandu Vijay, the host of our live show Love to Love that airs on Thursday live on Asia Stream at 2 p.m. every Thursday. Be sure to catch it this afternoon as well. We would love to hear back from you. Your thoughts, suggestions and comments are welcome at listener@radiosci.org. Moving along, it is now time for me to bring you part two of our ongoing Trisvid Divinity conversation with Brother Tom Leahy of Australia. This is the final part, and here it is for your listening pleasure. So let's go back to the ranger. So he asked you an odd question, and you went about and said no, and you went into the park.
I went into the park, and there was a place where you had to park the car, and there was quite a few vehicles parked there. I parked the vehicle and took my stuff. Actually, I could drive to unload my camping things, which I did, and then drove the car back into the car park. And there was an orange microbus. That's like a... Do you know what a microbus is?
Not really.
It's like a van.
That takes you for a tour inside?
No, it's like a camper van.
Okay.
It's a microbus will be understood by most European and Western countries. It's a... or a combi, they call it a combi. Anyway, it's a...
camper.
Like a camper. It's
okay,
a camper,
it's
yeah.
A camper.
It's only a two or three person
people
camper.
Can
it's
stay
not
in
a very
it.
Big camper.
Yeah,
yeah.
Got it.
Yeah. It's a camper. And so, and on the side of that, I saw a sticker. And I thought it was a man who I don't know, but he was a famous musician called Jimi Hendrix.
Yes.
Yes, which probably a lot of people make that association mm-hmm. with Sai Baba.
And
Because of the hair. And I saw that from a distance, and that's what I assumed. And I thought, oh, yeah. And I thought, well, that's an appropriate sticker to be on a camper van. That's what I thought at the time. But it wasn't. I realized it wasn't him. And I thought, yeah, and I looked at it. And there was funny things around the edge, but I didn't pay too much attention. Anyway, that evening, I had a dream. And in the talk that I gave, I didn't go into detail of the dream, which I'll go into a little bit more detail here.
Sure.
I had a dream, and he came... Actually, in the dream, I was standing as a small child at a bus stop at my grandparents' place, and I was standing holding my lunch ready to go to school. And the school bus came along, and there was a man driving the bus in an orange dress with bushy hair, but he had a matted lock coming out of either side. And the bus came along, but the bus didn't stop for me. It kept going. And then out of the back window, that same man was standing there, and in the talk I just described what he looked like, but this is actually what happened. He was standing there and he had the orange dress, the bushy hair and the matted locks, and he was holding what I thought was a pitchfork, which turns out to be a trident, in one hand, and the other hand was up with the palm facing outwards. And that was there for quite a while. He was standing in the back of the bus, big bus window, his full form was there, as the bus went by. And that's the main part of the dream I remember, him standing there, me just standing there looking at him. And then I woke up. And I woke up immediately, and I had a wonderful feeling of peace. I had this real peaceful feeling, like my mind was still, and, you know, I just felt... it was different to the feeling I'd had when the stone was deposited. It was a different feeling from that. Not energetic like that. It was quite calming. And so, I got up and I did a few things, went about my business for the day, and then I came across that sticker again in the car park and saw that sticker, and I thought, that looks like the same man in my dream. Mm-hmm. But he's got the, without the things coming out the side, the matted locks coming out the side of his head.
He didn't have a trident, the pitchfork either.
In the sticker?
Yeah.
No, the sticker was a picture of Sai Baba, just the bust.
Bust, yeah.
And it had the, I didn't understand it, but it had the different religious symbols around. Okay. And I wasn't familiar with all of those religious symbols. From my background, I wasn't familiar with those. I saw the cross. I'd seen the Om before, but not really familiar with it. I saw that and I thought, that's him. And then, as it turned out, I saw that it was the same ranger that after some time that owned this car. So I asked about this person. And they asked me why, you know, and I said, well, I had a dream, and they got very excited about that, the ranger, that I had a dream with this person. So they were very excited, and they got overexcited, in my opinion, and told me too much information in a very short time, and I just thought they were crazy, absolutely crazy. And so I didn't give much respect to what they were saying. And also someone else who I'd met, who I intended on going surfing with, we'd planned to go out, another person who was camping there, had said, watch out for that person, they're mad, they're crazy. But that made me also think, I need to find this person again, you know. Mm-hmm. Anyway, it was a couple of days later that he came in a second dream, and this time he didn't have the matted locks. He was just as we see him normally, and he was standing at the beach right where we were camped, and I was standing there next to him right on the sea, and so I was seeing myself in the dream with him, and he turned into a great big dolphin, and I turned into a baby one, and he dived from the edge of the sand into the water, and I dived in after him, and we swam across the sea together. And even that bit I saw swimming across the sea, and that was just beautiful. And I woke up once again with that very, you know, a peaceful, very calming sort of, you know, very calming feeling. But then when I got up, that was the, once again, I got up and I had ash on my arms and on my chest like this. And at the time I said, where's that come from? I thought maybe there's a campfire somewhere and it's blown in my tent. You know, and I was rationalizing what had happened. And there was, or maybe there's dirt somewhere. I couldn't understand what it was. And I couldn't brush it off. It wouldn't all come off. And so I had a drink and did a few things. And then I went down to the beach. And I thought, look, I'll have a bit of a wash in the sea. And I was standing right where this dream had taken place. And of course, this place, Monkey Mia, is famous for the dolphins. It's probably one of the most famous places in the world where the dolphins are tame. And people believe they're tame because of thousands of years of contact with the Aboriginal people, and they haven't lost that contact. And there's also dugongs and other very rare aquatic life that live in this region that are very protected. So people come from all around the world to this particular place to see the dolphins, because they just come right up and swim with you. It's wonderful. It's such a wonderful experience. A lot of people bring handicapped people and, you know, that sort of things there, but it's hard to get in and out of the water for those sorts of people. But I did see that happening when I was there. So the topic is dolphins. That's what everyone talks about at this place. Anyway, I was standing there and someone came up to me and they were talking a matter of fact things, and they said to me, do you know that a mother dolphin will never leave a baby dolphin alone, no matter what happens? And when they said that, you know, it was like a, I don't know how to explain that. So many things, you know, so many things sort of either fell into place or fell out of place. I don't know what it is. And I couldn't make sense of anything, and then my mind just stopped. It just stopped. And like I said in the talk, I felt that peace that passes understanding. Like it was just, there was just nothing. I was in bliss. It was wonderful. And of course the feeling, it finished. It finished because I had to interact with this person. And I realized that, you know, this was not a normal sort of a event. You know, there was, who is this person? You know, and I thought I should go and find out a lot more about this person from the ranger. And so quite quickly I went to find the ranger again, and I told them what had happened. And of course they were
getting very excited.
Very excited, yeah, extremely excited. And as it so happened, I then within a few days, it was still some distance to Perth, which was the closest capital city, a couple of days' journey. I made my way to Perth, and as it happened, Jack Hislop was on tour, John Hislop. And so I met him. He was one of the first people I met.
Oh, wow.
So that was a wonderful thing. So I became friends with John, and I met him several times since, here and there. And so that was really nice to make that connection with him.
Real quick jump there.
Yeah, pretty quick. There was what happens in Perth, they had a place called the Psy Oasis, which was a bookshop, which they had for many years. And that's where I was told to go, and I went there. And as I went there, he'd also arrived there. He'd just arrived.
Perfect timing.
And it was just him and some other chap. So, so that was wonderful for me. He was one of the first people to meet.
Right.
That was pretty cool.
So let's fast forward to the years you started coming to Puttaparthi.
Yes. Well, from there, I immediately booked a flight.
Yeah.
I went to the travel agent. It turned out that the travel agent was planning to go to Puttaparthi.
Oh.
Yeah, so that was pretty interesting.
Everything was synchronizing.
Yeah, everything was very synchronized. I couldn't get a direct flight. I had to go to Malaysia. I got to Malaysia and my booking got mixed up. I got put in a penthouse and I was with a traveling soccer team. Who were? It's a very funny story.
Sounds like a crazy movie.
It does. But it all happened. I was with a soccer team that was on tour, and they were from a Middle Eastern country, and they were all in these wonderful long gowns. And they asked me what I was doing, and I said, "Look, I'm going to see this man, Sai Baba, you know, and he's a." I tried to explain, and they thought this was fantastic, so they gave me one of their gowns, you know, and that was really nice. And then I caught a flight to Chennai. And then from there, flight to Bangalore. Got there, and I was told to go to a particular place. I got there, and the man said, "You've come just in time. We believe Swami's just arrived in Whitefield." He put me on an old bus, and from there I caught the bus. I didn't know where to get off. I had to ask people every now and then, and I remember people saying, "Which Baba? Which Baba?" You know, and I said, "Oh, Sai Baba." I didn't know very much at all. I didn't know anything. I had only a small bag. I had a pair of tracksuit pants on and a couple of shirts. You know, I came very light. And I got to the ashram, got to the front gate, and the only person around was the gatekeeper. He let me in. He let me walk in. And as I walked in the gate, from the other side of the compound, Baba walked out with another person, and he was very clear standing there, and he put his hand up like this. So I put my hand up and I waved back, like just like that. I had no idea about doing anything. People had told me things, but nothing had sunk in. And then he disappeared again. So that was my first introduction to Swami, like that.
Both of you waving a hi to each other.
I don't know what it is. Yeah. High five, yeah? Something like that, yeah. So that was my first physical introduction to Swami. But going back a few years, I did have another experience with Sai Baba, which I wasn't aware of until some time, and then it hit me.
Mm-hmm.
This is in 1986. I'll go back a few years. I was in a meditation group by chance. I had dabbled in bits and pieces, but didn't belong to everything.
By this time, you were already aware of Swami's presence?
No, not yet. So this is before...
Before the locket incident?
No, this is while I'm having the locket.
Okay.
But before I had deposited the locket.
Okay.
This is probably 2 to 3 years earlier than that. Now...
That would be the mid-80s.
This is 86.
Yeah,
mid-80s, exactly. Mm-hmm. So I was with some friends of mine, and there was a psychic man who used to come and tell us things and that sort of stuff, and that was interesting. I was always sitting on the fence, and he did a guided meditation with us. And in the meditation, he asked us to walk out of a house, through a garden, out through the forest to a mountain, up to the top of the mountain. All this took some time. And when we got to the top of the mountain, we were to meet God. And when we met God, we were to ask him what our purpose in life was. So this took a couple of minutes for him to describe all that in detail as we imagined that. It was a guided meditation. And so that all happened, and when I was to meet God at the top of the mountain, God appeared as such, and I asked the question, and he told me, and he said, and I asked the question, what was the purpose of my life? And he told me, and he said, love. One word, that was it.
What did God look like?
Well, when we got back, he brought the group back, and then we sat and he asked what happened. Did we see anything? And people described various things and told what they had heard. I didn't describe what I saw because I thought that I had seen something that, you know, I thought I'd had a strange sort of a vision. I thought that's pretty silly to say what I saw. I just described in the group what I heard. And I was the only one that had that answer as love. People had said other things and had seen other things. So I never described to anybody what I saw. But what I saw was Sai Baba, very clearly, very, very clearly. But I didn't believe that was God.
And you were not familiar with the form of Sai Baba at that time?
Not at all, and I didn't remember for some years after.
So he didn't really fit your image of God?
No,
He didn't have blonde hair, blue eyes?
Well, I didn't expect God to look like that either. I didn't expect to God...
Jesus?
No, I didn't expect Jesus would be God. No, God to me was sort of formless always. Mm-hmm. It was always a formless... Yeah, I'd always... God to me was always formless.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. I've heard a similar instance from a person who was in a Reiki session, who was learning Reiki, and she had to go through a similar guided meditation. And when she was told to open the door and see who's waiting for, God was waiting, and she saw Sai Baba there.
I only saw once again, sort of from the bust again, but I can still see that vision now. And, you know, his lips when he said the word love, you know, like that. But I didn't want to tell that to people because I thought, you're right, it didn't fit my image of God. Mm. It didn't fit my image of God at the time.
Now, Tom, your journey, once you came, obviously you had a huge spiritual hangover from a previous birth because the events in your life are very interestingly out of the box, mystical, mysterious. Your education is also rather unconventional, to study everything from sculpturing to goldsmithing to whatnot. Now, once you came into the Sai Baba fold, very quickly you took to it like a fish to water, and you did have a number of close, good experiences with Baba, as I can see from the pictures on your little iPad. So many pictures with Swami. When you look back, what are your fondest memories of interacting with him? And what did each of those moments teach you?
I think, personally, my relationship with Swami has always been internal. It hasn't been... Sure, I've had physical contact with Swami. But really, it's been the internal relationship that's been the strongest. I think... And I'm still, you know, I'm still on that journey, very much on that journey. And I'm very thankful that that's been my journey, that it hasn't just been a physical relationship. It's been a very internal relationship. So I've had a lot of, contact in various ways with Swami. I've never heard voices or anything like that. Mind you, I had a number amount of dreams and quite a lot of experiences in Australia, similar to the one I've described, with Swami in all sorts of unimaginable events. Some of them are quite long experiences, so I won't go into them here. There's one very interesting experience I'll tell you, because I saw a picture of Ramana, like I said, on your desk, Ramana Maharshi. When I came for the first time to India, I was given a copy of a book called The Tripura Rahasya, which is a book on Advaita. It's a very deep book. I'm not sure if you're aware of the book. It's a very...
No, I'm not.
Okay, it's produced by the Ramana Ashram, but it's certainly not written by him. Mm-hmm. It's really a concentrated extract of the Vedas. Mm-hmm. That's what it is. And it's told in parables.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the story of... told by Dattatreya. And it's the story of Parashurama and Dattatreya. Mm-hmm. And I was told that Swami had recommended this book to some students and books of similar nature on Advaita. And I had this book with me one day in darshan. And we were in a special darshan. This is quite a special story. We were in a special darshan for something we'd done, some work we'd done. And Swami had put us in a special line, not many of us, on the men's side. And he came up and he said, "What do you want?" And the chap in the front said, "Oh, pardon, namaskar, Swami." And we all said, you know, Swami said, "Yeah." And so there was, we were a line of maybe 10 or 12 men. We'd been doing seva. And Swami came along to each one of us, and we could take pardon, namaskar. And he spent a little bit of time with each person. And I was on the very end of the line. And I had the book with me by chance. And I was thinking to myself, well, I'll get Swami to bless the book. I really did enjoy reading the book. It was, I was getting a lot out of the book. It was my first real touch with Eastern philosophy, if you like. And I'd gone straight to the top.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, I'd gone straight to the top. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't decide, no, I won't get him to bless the book. I'll just accept whatever he gives. I won't ask for anything. And then the next second I'd think, no, I'll get him to bless the book. And, you know, my mind was back and forward because I had the book with me. And then, and with every person, he was getting closer with every... And then finally he came to where I was, and I decided, no, I wouldn't ask for anything. And I stuffed the book under my leg on the outside so it couldn't be seen. And Swami came, and of course he told me to take pardon namaskar. I got up, and he put his hand on my head, and then he started speaking to me, but I didn't understand a word he was saying. And I don't know if he was speaking in Telugu, I don't know what he was speaking in, what language. And then he came very close to me, and he pushed my legs to the side, pushed me right over, and then he came to the side, and he stood on the book.
Oh, he put his feet right on the book. Wow, what a precious copy.
Mm-hmm.
Totally energetic.
And he had his hand on my head, and then he continued to walk around me.
And it's, oh, wow.
And then he left. Mm-hmm. So that was a very special moment.
Well, I can imagine. Yeah. I've never heard of anything like that.
Yeah, so that book's very precious. So it's like my Bible, for want of another word. And
Tripura Rahasya.
Tripura Rahasya, yeah. That means the mystery beyond the Trinity.
I see.
Yeah, so that was a very special moment. And that was a very early moment with Swami, too. Yeah, so...
Now, you're actively involved in the Sai organization in Australia.
Yes, on and off, the various roles, on and off, yes.
You're a passionate seva person. What do you get out of it?
I think just doing it is the reward. You know, when you're involved in seva, that's the reward itself, you know. It's like, that's when you feel Swami's presence. You know, you want to be close to Swami, then you have to do that work. You know, there's no other way. That's what I've discovered. You have to serve everybody else to keep him with you. So that's why, you know, I see that as probably one of the most important things to do. I look forward to when I can do seva next. You know, of course we have to work, but, you know, we have a lot of, you know, in our group, we have ongoing service activities just for ourselves, just so we can maintain that contact with Swami. I mean, that's why we do it, really. We think, you know, we're not saving the world, we're not doing anything else. We just want to be close to Him. Or when I say close to Him, we want to have His love and His grace with us.
But why seva? Why not meditation? Why not personal prayer alone?
I do that as well. So I do pray every morning. Mm-hmm. That's part of my regular routine. I do pray every morning. So I sing the Super Bhatam in English every morning. You know, like I have my own routine.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I do everything. But I was the National Service Coordinator in Australia for some time and had various other roles. They're roles that are given to you. You don't necessarily, we don't have to ask for anything. It's just all given.
So is there, you obviously have a lot on your plate. How do you maintain a balance? Work, you need business, you need the money, you need
yes.
to serve your soul and nurture it as well with seva and sai activities.
Yes.
How do you strike a balance?
I don't know if there's a formula. I don't necessarily have a formula. I think you need to keep up your... I don't call it sadhana, but I will for the sake of the interview. You need to keep up your prayers and all those sorts of things. I think they're the sort of things... If you have a routine, this is what I've discovered, then a stable routine where you do, for example, pray and do some meditation or whatever it is every morning, that gives you a real focus. That keeps you focused so you can really manage your mind. And if you can't manage your mind, then you can't manage the rest of your life. And so that's my way of coping to a certain degree.
Makes sense,
yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Now, Tom, with the Mahasamadhi, has there been an impact on your relationship with Bhagavan Baba?
I think anybody from the West is used to not physically having Swami there because we have to come and go. We don't have a choice with that. And at best, my longest trip here was 4 months, and I was so lucky to have a trip that long. You know, I had enough money and enough time to be able to do that. I only had one trip like that. Most of them have been 5 or 6 weeks at a time, but quite a lot of them. So, you know, I've never had any really long periods with Swami, although 4 months may be considered long for someone from the West. So, you know, it's always been, for us, we spend more time away from him than we have in his physical presence. I think, but mind you, I haven't felt any less of his inner presence whatsoever, none whatsoever. And I think, sitting there at the Samadhi and praying, the thrill of Swami coming for darshan has gone. That thrill is definitely gone. But still, there's an element of serenity from being at the Samadhi that's very evident. That, you know, that it's still the holiest place on earth. There's no doubt about that.
I completely agree. That is my experience too.
Yeah.
In light of the Mahasamadhi, do you feel the responsibility on us as high devotees has shifted in any way?
I think we need to take more ownership for our transformation. I mean, that's something that I came to realize as well, that it's in our hands. And so I guess that Swami's departing, there's no choice but we take that ownership, that we take it into our own hands and we put that effort in. That's an obvious thing that I'm stating. I think most people would agree with that. It's a bit hard for us to see what the future might hold. Swami alluded to a few things. Of course, you know, he always said to learn to love his uncertainty, and I'm sure many people have said that. I was very fortunate because my last darshan, Swami called me up. So that was a very special thing for me. The last darshan I had, he called me before I took off for the plane.
Which was when?
That was in January 2011.
Oh, not too long before the Mahasamadhi.
Mm-hmm. So I was very fortunate to
what
have that contact.
What was his final advice to you?
I did most of the talking, actually. And it was quite funny. It was out of the blue. Swami, I didn't expect. I was leaving. Christmas was over, and of course I'm usually the last person standing from the Christmas committee. Everyone's left, so it's happened in the past when I'm the last one to leave, and Swami will interact with me about, you know, I'll tell him that the decorations are away, who's coming next year, just those sorts of things, just as a courtesy, more or less. I think in that role, I mean, you play a role there because you have a role and a responsibility to the position, so you need to report to Swami to a certain degree, or attempt to. So I would always write him a letter about what was going on, what stage the activities were at, and then, if given a chance, talk to him about it just before we left. Often John Benner had already left, and so in the last few years I was the next person to contact from there. When Arthur was in charge, often he would talk to Arthur about it, or Arthur's, you know, that sort of thing. So, but by that stage, I was the last person left. So the conversation would be basically around about, you know, I'd be reporting to Swami more or less about, you know, it wouldn't be a personal thing. It'd be a business type thing, for want of a better, you know, we're playing a role in that job. And so I think Swami respected that we did that. That we played the role properly, mm-hmm. and we told him what was going on and that mm-hmm. sort of thing. And so, and he just agreed with everything I said and said very happy. That was all that he said. I spoke for quite a bit about just various things about the program that had happened and what was planned for next year. It was very funny. I had a letter to give to Swami, which I forgot to give to him. And so then he asked for the letter. But prior to that, someone had given me another letter to take home to give to Arthur Hillcote. Because he hadn't come. So I pulled the letter out and I gave it to Swami, and the thought went through my mind, oh no, I'd probably be giving him Arthur Hillcote's letter. But turned out I gave him the right letter. He would have worked that out. Mm-hmm. And he took the letter. Then I got up and then he called me back again because I'd forgotten to take part in Namaskar. So I did that, and I mean, I just assumed I'd see him again as soon as I came back, but that wasn't the case. But I guess I can't be anything but grateful that he saw me on my last darshan like that and let me take part in, you know, like that. It was, I mean, what more could you ask for?
Brother Tom, one day you'll be a grandfather, I'm sure. And once you have grandchildren, what will you tell them about the years you spent with Sai Baba?
I'm still working out what I should tell my children, let alone my grandchildren. I tell my children you know, a lot of things about what happens between, because they don't get to have that interaction with Swami all the time. So,
but the children have lived as contemporaries of...
Oh, yes, they've all grown up with Swami.
Whereas your grandchildren will not...
No, that's right. From birth, the children have all come up inside. All of our children are in university now. They're all, you know, almost finished, off into the workforce. Not quite. None are married yet. Gee, what will I tell my grandchildren?
Who will say, Baba? What would you tell them?
Yeah. I think I'll let them ask the questions. You know, I think I'll let them ask the questions. I'll show them pictures and let them ask the questions. The souls that he sends us, you know, we don't know that. I believe that the souls are coming into the earth now. This is my personal belief that a lot of people think there's so many new people will come to Swami and they would have missed out. I don't believe that's the case. I think we're going to get very advanced souls coming that are going to come into the Sai fold that will be more advanced than what we've been, even though we may have had that sort of grace to be in his proximity. But they will have the wisdom, I believe, to carry everything forward, because it's not going to be us that does it. So I believe that we've got some very advanced people coming. That's my personal thoughts. So these will probably be more like children and grandchildren coming, you know, in the next 10 or 20 years. That's what I think. Even these youth that are coming now, we've had a large group just come from Australia. We've got some youth coming for the first time, never seen Swami. But I believe these people are very advanced, you know, and I think that they have a lot of insight that we don't have, and they have the capacity to take things to the next level. That's what I believe.
Mm-hmm. Are you curious about the Premasai avatar?
Oh, when I first met Jack Hislop, he showed me his ring about Premasai. And then, of course, I saw it over many years, and I saw it change. So I was very interested in that. I've had dreams with Shirdi Baba as well. I've never had what I thought was a close contact with Premasai. I've never really understood that. The closest thing I could relate that to was Jesus, as far as a picture goes. I have not thought too much about it. To me, it's not that important. I think what's important is really about what we experience in the moment. Yeah, I'm waiting to watch. A lot of my friends have very strong opinions about that, but I'm just sitting on the fence with that. I don't have anything. I don't know what's going to happen. I'm waiting to see what Swami will do.
And what has happened with you is precious enough.
Yes, just coping with what goes on at the moment is enough, and it's ongoing. It's ongoing. It's not something that's come and gone by any means.
Do you foresee yourself coming back to Puttaparthi for Christmas every year?
At the moment, yes. At the moment, I'll be coming for probably quite some time.
Wonderful talking to you. Thank you so much, Tom.
Thank you very much, Sairam.
Sairam.
Sairam, and welcome back to Morning Glory on Thursday Live. We are coming to you live from Prashanthi Nilayam, India on June the 12th, 2014. The time in the ashram right now is 32 minutes past 10 a.m. Indian Standard Time, that is. You just heard the concluding part of our Triswit Divinity conversation with Mr. Tom Leahy of Australia. Hope you enjoyed it. We look forward to your feedback by email at listener@radiosai.org. With that, it's time for some very important messages that I'm going to play for you now. You're listening to Radio Sai Global Harmony, bringing you the message of Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba. Tryst with Divinity is our weekly series in which we bring you conversations with devotees of Bhagwan Baba from around the globe.
I had a lot of fractures, I had a lot of bruises, and I had breathing problems, but it was Baba, Baba, Baba every day. With every breath, with every step I would take while running, it would be Om Sri Sai Ram.
Well, it actually all started with my mother getting a vision of Swami. This was in 1970 when she was cooking.
There were lots of roses and, of course, tiny little rosebuds which was nowhere ready to bloom. And he just touched it with his finger.
Mm-hmm.
And just like a movie or a video, mm-hmm. right in front of my eyes, you know, this rosebud started to get bigger and bigger and bigger and opened out into a beautiful rose.
Love all, serve all. We've made as famous as Swami has at the Hard Rock, because we put it on millions and millions of T-shirts, jackets, buttons, badges, everything. If you got your check, if you work for me at the top, love all, serve all. We put huge signs up in every restaurant around the world.
Tryst with Divinity is our weekly series in which we bring you conversations with devotees of Bhagwan Baba from around the globe. You can listen to this on Asia Stream of Radio Sai every Tuesday at 9:50 a.m. and 8:30 p.m. To know more about the timings of this weekly series, Tryst with Divinity, on other streams of Radio Sai, please go to the schedule page on our website, radiosai.org. Or you can download and listen to any interview of your choice in the Tryst with Divinity series at your leisure by visiting the link radiosai.org/tryst. That is radiosai.org/TRYST or Tryst. Thank you and happy listening. Sai Ram.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m.
on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Sairam, dear listeners, and welcome back to Morning Glory on Thursday Live. Thanks for staying tuned to Prashanthi Nilayam via this live broadcast at 10:36 a.m. on June the 12th, 2014. It is now time for me to lift your spirits with a very lively episode of Fleeting Moments, Lasting Memories from our classics collection. I have picked the interview of Brother Indreshwar Singh, an alumnus of Baba's school and university, and he's in conversation with Radio Sai's Mr. Bishop Rushti. And just an interesting aside that I'd like to share with you is that I really enjoy this interview very much, and I have it on my USB key. So whenever my husband and I are on a long drive, we always play it in the car, and we never get tired of listening to it because it's so enjoyable, it's so humorous, it's so uplifting. And I'd love for you to have the same benefit, but before you enjoy it, here's an important announcement, and this will be followed by the interview. Happy listening, dear listeners.
Let me narrate to you an episode. Our room leader was Kotesa. I asked him, is it compulsory to go for darshan? I had the nerve to ask him that.
I think it's a very sea change when you become a Sai student, because it's only when I've joined the Satya Sai College I discovered that this God is not a photograph on the wall, and he's not something so distant, he's something very, very near you.
And this was lovely, because there you had on the gymnastic bench the student on one side, Swami on the other side, locked in battle again. It was arm wrestling with Swami.
With Swami.
And having been given the divine golden opportunity to have studied in his institutions and directly experienced his love, then we have to really live our lives to reflect his teachings.
Fleeting Moments, Lasting Memories is our weekly radio series in which we bring you conversations with the former students of Bhagwan Baba's schools and colleges. You can also listen to this on Asia Stream of Radio Sai on the Morning Glory segment of Thursday Live, which starts at 9:40 a.m. To know more about the timings of this weekly series, Fleeting Moments, Lasting Memories, on other streams of Radio Sai, please go to the schedule page of our website, radiosai.org. You can also download and listen to this at your leisure by visiting the link radiosai.org/saistudents. That is radiosai.org/saistudents. Thank you and happy listening. Sai Ram.
Sai Ram, Brother Indreshwar Singh, it's really a privilege to have you in the studios of Radio Sai today for this continuing serial, Fleeting Moments, Lasting Memories. And just as the name suggests, you know, in this program, we always have former students of Bhagwan's university who share their indelible experiences, their moments of learning and revelation, staying with the one who is really the summum bonum of this universe, but at the same time very sweetly plays the role of the chancellor of Sri Satya Sai University. So share with us your unforgettable moments. How did your journey to the Sri Satya Sai University happen? How did you become a Sai student coming from such a royal family miles and miles away from Puttaparthi in Gujarat?
It's a great honor for me to be over here, but I'll take you down memories lane to some time in mid-80s. And this story has all the makings of a soap opera. So be ready for something which you totally don't expect. Now, what had happened is, I'd studied in a school which is called Rajkumar College at Rajkot, and the students over there were kind of prepared with a military kind of a background. So I was looking forward to the glamours of joining an adventurous lifestyle in the army. And my maternal part of the family had all served in the forces, and I was wanting to be in the ranks along with them. Little did I know what God had in store, that I was to be a part of the White Army and not to be marching around in olive green, but to have the olive branch in hand.
Right.
Now, it so happened that my 10th standard examinations were over, and a group of us friends, we were also related, and we had totally decided as to how we would get into St. Xavier's in Bombay, a very reputed college. And studies was just about the last thing on our mind.
Okay.
We had worked out our bikes, our cars, where we were going to stay, what we were going to do. And in the middle of all that, we would have suffered a little bit of education too. Now, Swami worked out things in a different manner. So just about when I thought the stage was set and nothing could go wrong and everything had been worked out, I reach back home and my grandmother tells me, "Gopal, we are going to Parthi tomorrow." And she looked at my face and thought, you know, I would be in bliss. In fact, the tears which streamed down my eyes were that of fear.
There were tears?
There were tears. And the fear was, oh my God, everything was moving in a straight pakka order, but Baba can change things. And I was worried that Baba might ask me to join his college.
Big worry, huh?
Now, it is very difficult to comprehend that a boy who has been born in the Sai fold, who's been named by Swami, and I loved Swami with all my heart, as I do now. But then, my concept of Sai students was that they study, and they are steady, and they spend the rest of their time clapping and singing bhajans. Now, this is what I didn't want to get into. I wanted a very adventurous lifestyle. And I wasn't keen to get trapped with what I thought were golden manacles of virtues and sitting down in the portico, because I had come and seen the Sai students over a number of years. Anyway, we landed in Puttaparthi. I was hoping that it's only a one-day visit. And in one day, the chances are that Swami may not call us, may not talk to us. And if he did, grandmother would possibly just get by a few sentences. And I'm sure there were more important things on God's mind than talking about a boy's education. As things would have it, Swami took us inside the interview room. As I walked in, I still felt there was fear palpably hanging over every nerve and sinew of my body. As I sat down, all the ladies on one side, my mother, my grandmother, and aunt, me on the other side, solely representing the male cordon, feeling very isolated,
ready for a
God in the middle.
Already it's a lost battle. Did you feel that way?
It almost looked like that. I said, yes, things are now closing on to me. And Baba put me at ease. He kept talking about other things with my grandmother.
Oh.
And I heaved a sigh of relief that, yes, things are going in a different direction. He suddenly looked at me and he said, Rajmata, what about Gopal's studies? So Gopal at once sprung up, speaking in lieu of her. So Swami, I've done very well in Rajkumar College, and Swami wanted me to study over there and make a man of myself. Yes, Swami, I'm now ready for the forces. It takes about a year more to study, and I'm now going to get into St. Xavier's in Bombay. And everything is all right, and by your grace, you needn't worry about it.
Oh, you assure Swami.
I was trying to assure Swami, hoping that I could con the game away. But it wasn't to be like that. Grandmother spoke again. She said, Swami, it is my greatest cherished desire that my grandson studies at your lotus feet. I said, that's it. You see, in our family, we are a very traditional family, and if the elders speak, the junior is not allowed to speak. You're only allowed to say ji or ji hukam, which is I obey your command. So I kept quiet, sat down, and knew that I didn't stand a chance. But who do you think should come to my rescue? None other than Bhagwan himself.
Oh.
He said, Ha Rajamata, Gopal is right. You see, everything is all right. He can join my college. But and then he stopped at that pot. And that seemed an eternal moment. Because he never spoke for about 10-15 seconds. And in that time which elapsed, my entire life in RKC was reviewed. And I knew that all the things that we had done did not pass by Swami's high standards of living. Now, I don't think I had transgressed any particular line. I hadn't done something which was really very bad. But then Swami didn't like boys being boisterous and going out for a movie and never listened to my teachers. I was always creating some hangama. And Swami kept it at butt and a long silence. I was scared. I didn't know what he would come out with. And everything that he would come out with meant just, in bold letters, trouble. And what he came out with sounded so insipid. He said, Rajmata, Hamara Gopal ko non-veg pasand hai. Now this seemed the least of the crimes. So I said, all right, that's not a problem. Ha Swami, Swami bahut pasand hai. Going along with Swami, I jumped queues, he was on my side. And Swami played along. Dekho, Bombay mein, when it is a Monday or a Thursday, those were the days it was compulsory for me to be a vegetarian. So what I used to do, I used to run away to some shady small joint and go and have my fill and come back. And Swami revealed that. And Gopal, Kemp's Corner, down Jata, Altamont Road, down to Gwalior Tank, उधर वो मुस्लिम का वो छोटा सा कबाब जॉइंट है उधर जाके तृप्ति करके आ जाता है सो फॉर द सेक ऑफ एवरीवन टू अंडरस्टैंड दैट गोपाल वुड गो डाउन अ पर्टिकुलर रूट गो इंडल्ज इन हिज पैशन टू ईट हिज नॉन वेजिटेरियन स्टफ एंड कम बैक वेल सैशिएटेड आई हार्टिली अग्रीड विथ हिम If this was the qualification to disqualify me, so be it. I seemed in safe waters. And then Swami proceeded a little further. As my head was bobbing around, nodding like a pendulum, totally in consonance with Swami's words, he said, What about 2 days in a week? In the school where he used to study, they get non-veg every day, one meal a day. And still Gopal used to go out. And I'm nodding my head, yes, Swami, very much so. And it continued a little further. Now Swami played a game that I was totally unprepared for.
He named the route from where we used to go out. Dekho, south ground mein jata, pavilion ke piche se, wo jump maar ke wall ko cross karta. He would go to the south ground, behind the pavilion, jump across the wall. Yes, Swami. And then the next lines struck me down. Kabhi Bharti ke paas jata, kabhi Reshma ke paas jata. I was stunned into silence. The point was that Bharti was my omelette stall that I used to go to, which was just outside my ground, on the periphery of our college. All these small hand carts with their little, you know, food stuff, they would come and sell their wares to the greedy students. And I happened to be one of their most patronizing clients. But Bharti was an omelette handcart, and Reshma was a similar one, which was for kebabs. And it just depended on how much money was jingling in the pockets as to where I went, which direction I took. But Swami did not explain that Bharti was an omelette cart and that Reshma was a kebab one. Kabhi Bharti ke paas jata, kabhi Reshma ke paas jata. I look absolutely stunned, and my grandmother saw that expression. The expression of a man who was absolutely blown. My face had gone pale. She looked at me, she looked at Swami's mischievous smile, and before she could say anything, Swami says, "Dekho, aur bhi bol sakta hai, bolu." I thought he had done enough damage for one day. I said, "Nahi, Swami, aise college mein join kar sakta hai?" "Yes, Swami." And my grandmother flung herself at his feet. "Swami, please save these boys, this Rajput dynasty, from the times of, you know, yore till now. This is their weakness. He can't help it. It's a part of genetics. Swami, please save him. His soul will go into oblivion." And before I knew what had happened, there was a huge drama in the room. People staring at me, Swami with a mischievous smile, my grandmother lamenting at Swami's feet. And before I knew, I had consented to the very thing that I had set out with a strong determination not to become: a Sai student. Well, it doesn't stop there. The drama carries on. I came back and informed my friends, and all of us got into our devilish meeting, and we had to decide on chalk out a plan as to now how would I ensure that I don't get into Baba's college.
Oh, you still had hopes.
I still had hopes, you see. So they told me, they said, "You must find out." So they had heard that the process of an interview and the written examination was a very sincere way of getting in, and that there were no recommendations. So you literally had to pass and swim your way through. So I said, "Ah, that presents a very bright prospect, and I may not go in." So I didn't prepare myself for the entrance examination. And I was sure that if I didn't do well, Swami's system was a very honest system. I had full hopes in that. And I said, "I won't get in." About 5 days before the examination, a Sai devotee came to our house and mentioned, "Oh, Gopal is going to join Baba's college, and I'm sure you're working very hard to keep up, you know, the name of your family." And then it struck me. I said, "Oh my God, I better work hard, because it will pull down the name of my family. So I must get past the written examination, but must do something to foil the interview." So I studied hard, I got past my writtens, and now I take you to my interview over there. And in the interview, the entire panel was sitting over there, all very honorable people, and whom now I have learned to love over the ages. But at that point of time, I was trembling and trying to figure out a way where I could be honest. I was not given to speaking lies. and yet at the same time do something which doesn't reflect badly on the family, and yet I should be out of the soup. And at that point of time, opportunity presented itself. I was asked to sing bhajans. I said, see, I know a few lines and I can smatter a few of them, and I don't have a very good voice. And very obliquely I mentioned that, you know, around the times that people at home are doing bhajans, I usually have some better things to do at that time. I was hoping this would subtly fly its way across and make a cross on my name over there. But people over there weren't going to be taken in by this. And they said, fine, if you can't sing bhajans, it's fine by us. Can you sing a film song? I said, fabulous. Nobody could have thrown a lollipop straight at me like that. And the song that I chose was a very nice song. So I started off with Ram Teri Ganga Meli Ho Gayi Hai Papiyon Ke Paap Dhote Dhote. And as I continued on my second line and on my third line, I was shocked to see that the esteemed panelists were swaying. They were moved by the music. And when I stopped abruptly, I was told that, you see, we always knew you were the right candidate. I got shocked. Even when you love a Hindi movie song, it is about Ram and Ganga and Paap Dhona. You see, the seeds of culture are in you, my boy, and they need to be watered and brought up, and there's no better place on earth than Swami's college. Congratulations, you are in. And that's how I joined in. A few days later, as I was still reverberating with the cultural shock of being in a very cultural institute, I slowly started enjoying it. And I loved the routine a little further down the line, but I hadn't given up my hope of joining the army. And that's a very long story as to how the whole of it happened. But by this particular incident, what I was trying to show to all my dear brothers and sisters is that Swami is very, very compassionate. And even if you think you know what you're doing is right, He knows what is right for you. And He had made a statement. He said, yes, you studied in that previous school. You made a man of yourself. Now come to my college and make a gentleman of yourself. Then leave the college and tread on the path of my words and find the God in yourself. So He had etched out my life's plan in three simple lines. So you've heard the first part, where I'd made a man out of myself. You saw how I almost made a fool out of myself till God rescued me. Now I'd like to take you down to a very different experience, something that I don't think normally comes across. And this is about 3 months after I joined Swami's college. At that particular moment, on that fateful evening, I was sitting in the portico. My eyes were closed and I was indulging in my favorite sport for the moment then. I was boxing a person. Very unlike a Sai student, but as you can see, my beginnings were from a very martial background. These vasanas had still not left me. And to give you a background, what had happened is, one gentleman had not been too gentle with the family. He had won the coveted position of being the confidant of my grandmother and had made his way to the bank accounts, to the very many public charitable trusts, and had assured that he could break the trust of the family members intra amongst themselves, and therefore he was helping himself to the assets. And the family was standing to lose an astronomical amount in terms of wealth. We were also deeply grieved that a lot of good which could be done to the poor was flowing to his pockets. And we couldn't do anything about it. We were helpless. Even Swami called him Ki Chor. But it was just meant to be. It was a part of the karmic cycle. I can now reconciliate with it. But at that point of time, I was very new to it. If a man like that had robbed us, I had every right to box his ears. And that is exactly what I was doing. For I could do nothing more to him. And when I approached the elders of my family, they were all very philosophical. They saw it from a karmic point of view. That's all right. We must have taken from him. He must be taking from us in this life. It totally went above my way of thinking. I couldn't understand that people could look at it so mildly, and there were hundreds of crores just moving out. Never mind. So I bring you back to the portico. I was sitting over there, and Ki Chor had received a very generous overdose of my triceps and pectoral muscles, and the metatarsals were just greeting his jaws, when all of a sudden the interview room opened and Swami came out. He came straight at me, a total beeline at me, and says, "Gopal, come." And I got up. I didn't know what to think. I didn't know why he was calling me. His face was very grave. I knew there was a problem. As I sheepishly walked behind him, the shepherd and his sheep made their way to the interview room. The doors closed, and I looked at him in a moment to say, "Now what have I done, Swami?" I was used to doing things and getting in trouble, but this time I was unaware about it. And Swami sat down. He put his hand on my shoulder. We were sitting very close to each other. He looked at me in my eyes and he said, "Gopal, what are you doing?" So, "What have I done, Swami? Why are you thinking about Kishore like this?" That word was enough to make me erupt. And I again exploded. "Swami, last of all you should be asking. Swami, you know what he has done. He's destroyed the family. He's trying to destroy relationships. He is such an evil man. How can he persist in spite of the fact that we are at the feet of divinity? Swami, you must do something." There was a gentle smile playing on Swami's lips. "I am doing. I'm going to save you from murder." Said, "Swami, murder? Not thinking of killing him." He says, "That's what you are doing, my dear. Whilst you were sitting here in the portico, you boxed him black and blue in your mind, and you killed him 3 times. Isn't it true?" "Yes, Swami, that's true. But you see, I won't actually do something to him physically. It's just that I'm not able to do something. Swami, I'm thinking about it over here." Then Swami revealed that, "You see, God's ways are different from man's ways. By man's laws, you need to kill a person to get into trouble. But in God's books of law or love, however way you can have it, the moment you think, the act is done. So you thought 3 times, and the karmic repercussion of it comes back to you 7-fold. So you thought of it 3 times, you're going to face the punitive measures of 21 murders. Are you ready for it? That's what you've done in less than 30 minutes over here." I was absolutely shocked. "My God, Swami." Swami continued further. Said, "Yes, most people don't realize. Most of the times, when a person is being victimized, you think of hitting back at your aggressor. Here, you were hitting back at an evil person. And in the process of doing so, you have incurred a karmic debt. But Ki Chor has gone laughing away with your wealth, and he is not thinking of killing you. So he is not going to be guillotined, but you are going to enter your neck in the noose. I was again taken aback. Swami, it's highly unfair. It's not just. But then, those are the ways of the celestial laws, and you have to abide by it. So I said, Swami, what can I do? So he said, now tell me, what do you think about Kishore? I was shocked. I was scared, but it still didn't mean I had ceased to hate him. So I said, Swami, I'm scared for myself, but when it comes to Kishore, my feelings for him are none the better. So Swami looked. Acha Gopal, go back to boxing him. So I was taken aback. Just a moment ago he had told me to stop doing it, and once again I thought I was granted reprieve, a spiritual pardon, and I could go back and settle scores with him. God was my witness in front of me, empowering me. My blows were even more severe. I could hear this guy screaming. And suddenly the scene changed. And in my mind's eye came a very vivid picture in front of me. I was on top of a cliff. And yes, it was an igneous cliff. And there was a sea down below. And the waves were lapping by against very sharp rocks that looked like jaws of an open shark's mouth, you know, ready to take in someone should they fall down. And I could see that my last blow had tripped this man, and he was very slowly tipping over the cliff. And I was watching him. And then there was Swami over there. And Swami said, Gopal, what is happening? I said, Swami, Kishore is falling at last. And Swami said, all right, what is in his hands? And I hadn't noticed. You see, in my gusto to get even with him, I hadn't seen that in his hands was a lovely bundle of joy. There was this cute little baby whose lovely eyes were petrified with fear, and they were looking at me. And the next moment, I couldn't help myself. I knew that this Kishore is going to fall down and die, but I must save this child. I must save him. And at once I lunged forward to catch this child. In that process, I had to embrace Kishore to save this child. And now we were at the edge of this precipice. We were going to tip over. It's either him falling down, but I had to save him. I had to save this child. This child was very beautiful, innocent. It didn't deserve to die. And I wasn't going to kill this child. I felt love oozing out of my heart, trying to save him. I was screaming, Baba, help me, please, let me save this child. And as I was trying to pull this Kishore, pull the child across to me, I felt my muscles were straining. And slowly and steadily, I was able to gain the weight on my side. And slowly, literally, the cliff-hanging scenario ended. And the child was safe. And I could see that as I last drew this man on my side, he had implicit faith in me, because I was the one who stood between him and death, and he had granted his life, his very life, in my hands. And as that thing got over, I was dripping with sweat. The scene ended. And I was back in the interview room, my eyes opened, and Swami said, Gopal, how was it? I couldn't speak. And he says, Gopal, do you hate Kishore now? I said, no, Swami. He said, yes. Now this is a lesson for you to learn. Whenever you have hatred, you must bring an object which can pull out love from your heart and visualize in a manner that your love goes out to that very cute object. And Swami mentioned, it can be a child, a small cute puppy, anything which makes you love that person. And once you've got love coming out of your heart, then let your love flow to your object or person of derision, the person you hate, and let it engulf that person. As that person is drowned in your love, it doesn't matter that that person physically somewhere else continues to hate you. Your karmic tie with that person is severed. Because finally, no matter what happens, each person, however you start off, you see TT match, where the ball is in each one's court, it may start off with anger, hatred, jealousy, love, and the ball is back in your court and you send it swinging back, you know, with an aggressive round of another negative feeling. It finally can only end when there's love on both sides. And if you can't do it physically, then this is the metaphysical way of getting around it. I was amazed. But when I walked out of the interview room, from that day till now, I have no negative feeling for that gentleman. He's totally forgiven as far as I'm concerned. And should he happen to meet me, I would be more than willing to share a wonderful cup of coffee with him and I would enjoy his company. I have nothing whatsoever against him. A little further down in life, as Swami showed me different ways to deal with negativity, I came across what one of our most revered and most hallowed members of Swami's hierarchy of elevated souls is Phyllis Crystal. And she has come out, I'm sure most of you would know, how to cutting the ties that bind.
Right.
The figure of eight.
Mm.
And in that I came across visualization exercises. And I realized I had just done a shortcut of that very long process in possibly 5 minutes in the interview room.
And under divine guidance.
Under divine guidance. And I thought at a point of time when the negative forces are magnifying in the world and we are all caught in the vicissitudes of life, I thought it would be wonderful to share with all our loved ones a very simple way to get through with any negative emotion, and most of all to be beware that even a victim should not think badly of his or her aggressor. I'll add another thing that I learned at a separate point of time in life from Swami, and this came as a greater jolt than before. Being a Sai student, I was now mellowed down from what I was earlier. I had changed my way of life. And in a particular handling of a situation, I had been very, very soft and had allowed another person to take advantage. And it really didn't matter to me that a little amount of power and pelf was being lost. But I thought I was maintaining my sanity. I was being true to the principles of being good. And hearken, I was advised by Swami, Gopal, it is not right for you to willingly let go your position and let somebody else take away a little of what is rightfully yours. And should you allow another aggressor to be more aggressive, that too is a kind of a papa. And I was shocked. I said, here I am. You should be feeling nice about it, that I thought I had attained a spiritual level. I had willingly relinquished a certain amount of wealth to someone. And here I am being chastised for the very purpose of not sticking on to something. And I was told that, see, should this person get away by doing this to you, then he will be more emboldened to do it to another person. Thereby, you are setting in motion a chain of events where a person who is not in the right is being allowed to get away by doing the wrong. And you should be powerful enough not to let him do that. So it's a very fine line to understand that where are you a victim and where are you standing for yourself and where you should not let the other person get away. I think in most cases it's difficult for the discriminatory faculty, especially if it is imbued with very strong emotions, to come up with an answer. It would be easier just praying to Bhagwan and letting him come up with the answer. Mm. But I thought, mm, I'd also let you know that this is something I learned on one of my journeys.
I think the first part, the most profound lesson you learn is the power of love. I think love rules the world.
Yes.
And if you have love in the heart, I think it takes care of everything else.
It takes care of everything.
I think even in the second situation, love is the answer even there.
I think love triumphed. It's been beautifully said with someone. He said, I don't know what the question is, but I know one thing. Verily, the answer is love.
I will like to add here one instance.
Yes.
I was just talking to one alumni recently.
Yes, yes.
And he was saying an instance which he encountered in the train. There was this train ticket examiner,
yes,
who was asking for extra money. It sometimes happens, you know,
yes,
if you want a deserved berth. They want some...
More often than not, that's the,
yeah,
scenario.
And this boy, being a Sai student, he felt that what this person is doing is actually wrong. And he felt so much love in his heart for him because he felt... The money that he's earning this way will only do more disservice to him.
Yes.
Apart from causing inconvenience to so many other passengers. So he just, with a lot of confidence and love in his heart, he just went up to this person and he said, listen, mister, what you're doing is actually hurting yourself. Whatever money you're going to earn through these wrong means, you're also going to lose it in some unexpected manner. Be it some accident, be it some health problem in the family. And I sincerely request you to rethink what you're doing. I'm just feeling like conveying this to you because I'm not feeling happy about this, what you're doing. The TT was so stunned, not by this person's aggressiveness, but this person's, that he could see that genuine love in this
feeling,
person,
yeah,
feeling for him. That day he allowed, along with this boy, every other passenger, the berths, without taking an extra pile.
Phenomenal.
So this boy saved
the
TTE from doing anything wrong.
Very true. It has been rightly said in Hindi, Lakshmi ji jis dwar se aati hai, usi dwar se jaati hai.
Hmm.
So should one person make his money through wrong means, it will also go by a very tragic way. And it's been said in English that a person who has led a shady life can never think of the sunny sunshine in his life.
Oh.
So, if you're
we are living, we are living in the sunshine. You're always living.
So
the
we
sun.
Are basking in his glory,
yeah,
and we do not understand this because we are enjoying Swami's love day in and day out.
It's been such a revealing session. I think you can never stop talking about this power of love. It's so phenomenal, and living with the one who is the embodiment of that love in his every action, every thought. Even today, while Swami was sitting there, you could just see, Swami just feel that he's love, that's it. And living with such a person, having such a person as our Chancellor, for the, all the students, it's a great privilege. And also sharing these such precious moments, I think it's a great inspiring experience for everyone who's listening. And I'm really very grateful to you for having taken this time off to share these really amazing instances with all of us.
I'm more thankful to you. And I believe that these are very profound moments in my life, but I'm very grateful that I got a chance to share it with everyone. And as you truly said, it's an indelible experience which strikes a chord in your heart which I'm sure will vibrate for eternity.
Thank you very much, sir. And before we end, I would like to invite you to please come again whenever you can and share some more instances of your stay at the Lotus Feet. And even after that, today we covered only the instance of you coming to the Lotus Feet.
Yes, 3 months actually in all. Yeah.
And I know you have studied for some more years. Yes. So we eagerly wait for your second episode.
I look forward to it. Thank you very much, Sairam.
Sairam, dear listeners, you just heard a Fleeting Moments interview with Mr. Indreshwar Singh, an alumnus of the Sai School and University. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did in bringing it to you. Your feedback is welcome at listener@radiosai.org. With that, it's time for me to wish you a Saisome awesome day ahead. May all that you do, think and speak be inspired by our beloved Bhagwan. May Swami hold your hand all the way, step by step, through this day, so that everything you and I do is worthy of being offered at His lotus feet. With that, I'm happy to not sign off, not at least not just yet, but continue with Service Love in Action on behalf of my colleague, Brother Raghu.